Hello, this is The Leg Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel Pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
You're listening to The Linux Show. Or maybe you're thinking about it. I don't know. This is probably a commercial. Want to find out about Linux and open source? Check us out at www.linuxshow.com for the best in Linux community news. Check us out.
It is February the 25th, 2002. Man, that was the longest 3 seconds of my life. We're back with another edition of the Tuesday night edition of The Linux Show, bringing you the hot news of the week, or the past month, perhaps, of what's going on in Linux and the open source community. We have the whole crew here tonight. Amazing. From various health problems to spouse health problems to road trips. We've had a hard time keeping the whole crew together the last month, but amazingly enough, for the last show of the month, we are all here out on the far west coast. We've got Doc. How you doing tonight, Doc?
I'm doing great. I got the sniffles, but aside from that,
so
fine.
Spring has already officially started?
Well, I don't know if it's officially started, but we don't really have winter in Santa Barbara. We have the rainy season, which we didn't have in January at all. As a matter of fact, in the middle of January, there was I heard one weather forecast that said, well, it's not going to rain this month, which is pretty amazing when coming from where I do on the East Coast. You don't hear forecasts like that. And it didn't, but we've had some rain this month, but it's all been like at night, you know, and in the morning, all the flowers are blooming, and it gets up to about 65 degrees, and it's quite pleasant.
Isn't that like really bad news for the water reservoirs?
Well, the reservoirs here have gotten a lot more rain than we have. I mean, what you want here in California is enough to fill the reservoirs and to slow the drying out of everything for the fire season, which runs about 8 months. There is no fire. The fire season has not started yet, and the more rains we have later, the less likely everything will burn down. So, other than that, everything's fine.
Well, we had a good storm down here, and
yeah, we got it stronger than we did, I think.
Yeah, and then, of course, then that's the mudslides.
Everywhere you've had fires, you have debris flows.
You either have fire or mudslides.
Yeah.
Or earthquakes.
Earthquake. There was one the other day just on the other side of me.
Did you feel that? It was in Big Bear. Did you feel
Big
that?
Big Bear. No, I didn't feel it. It was 4:30 in the morning, and I didn't wake me this time.
But my wife felt it. We were in San Diego at that time at the Linux desktop thing, and my snoring was keeping her awake, and she felt the hotel shake. So she felt it.
Well, yeah, speaking of earthquakes, are you guys just a little bit nervous now that they've they've reclassified that earthquake from Mexico last month, that it is perhaps, it's definitely the strongest earthquake that has actually been recorded, but maybe...
Was it like a 9 or something?
It was like an 8.9.
Really? Where
was
it located?
About 400 miles from Mexico City. It was a real small size, you know, the footprint of the earthquake was tiny, but the epicenter, the movement of the earth at the epicenter, apparently the earth was moving from side to side about 15 feet, and it was moving up and down about 30 feet.
Wow.
And
I thought that the one in Alaska in 64, that
was
pretty much leveled
Anchorage
was like close to a 9.
Yeah, that was an 8.7 something.
Yeah, there was another one in Chile that was an 8 something or other.
Yep.
At one point.
But it's not very far from L.A., that's for sure.
Well, it's, Yeah, it's pretty far, actually. It's about 1,000 miles.
Well, I feel nice and safe here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
So how are things out on the East Coast, Russ? Have you dug yourself out yet?
I can only hope. No, actually, I've managed to unearth most of our cars. Most of the snow has sort of collapsed. It hasn't gone away, but it's shrunken and solidified. So now the dogs can walk on top of the snow drifts instead of going into them. But otherwise, you know, we are surviving, and we're expecting a potential of another couple of 3 inches or something like this tomorrow night. So, but other than that, life's you know, pretty joyful, and things have returned to normal, and we probably won't see sidewalks for the next 3 weeks. But outside of that, things are going well.
Yep. Things have continued to be strangely unusual here in Chicago, which is the norm. On two consecutive days in the last week, we were 60 degrees, then 20 degrees, then 40 degrees, all in a couple of day period. So we're just bouncing up, bouncing back and forth, depending upon which way the wind's blowing. Pretty crazy. Let's go ahead and jump right into the first segment. I do have some announcements I want to make, but I think I'll wait until the break time to make the announcements, make sure that everybody who is going to show up in our listening audience does show up. We've got sort of a thin listener group right at the moment. I've been informed that apparently there's a couple of big news stories that are going on right now, something dealing with a NASA announcement, and that may be part of the problem why we're having such a thin turnout tonight. Who knows?
Wow.
But let's go ahead and jump right into the first segment. Russ, you sent me a bunch of stories, so why don't you take off and jump in with a couple, and everybody feel free to put in your 2 cents. So, Russ, take it away.
All righty. Actually, something came to me after we assembled tonight's links. And, in fact, I don't have a link for this one. It was sent to me in an email from one of my readers over at InfoWorld named Norm. Thank you, Norm, if you're listening. it's an excerpt from the Windows and .NET magazine update, which I gather is a like a weekly newsletter or something like this sent out through email. And this has a commentary by Paul Thurrott, I guess is the pronunciation of his last name, who is one of the regulars over at that magazine. And he has a column called The Problem with Linux. And just to summarize, he basically says that, you know, people say Linux is a disruptive technology, but, you know, it may seem that way on the surface, but when it comes down to it, it's not. And he goes on to say how Linux is simply replicating the mistakes of Unix, being tied to the command line, and various other things. The development process, since it's not driven by a single corporation with a single vision, that means it's flawed. No way to handle central concerns. And it kind of rattles on and comes to the conclusion that, quote, unless Linux grows up quickly, it will simply provide Microsoft with the incentive the company needs to improve its products more quickly than it had been doing Let's just leave it at that and forget the other thing. But it's, you know, it's one of these wonderful little pieces, and
it's cheerleading fluff.
Yeah,
they're feeding their own community.
Meaningless. It's delusional. That's all.
Yeah.
There's a lot of FUD here. The challenging thing about it, you know, personally, is that since it's being spread among the readers of this one magazine, and I can't even find an online version of it. This is the type of kind of stealth FUD that we have to deal with. The FUD, you know, it's one thing to find the clueless article in a major magazine and go after it. It's another thing when you have little missiles like this being sent around in a way that that none of us in the Linux camp may even see, let alone have the ability to respond to, because we just don't know it's there. But it's you know, there was nothing particularly challenging in the logic of the thing. He's got a lot of things wrong, quite frankly. But well, it was just kind of disturbing to see a piece like this. I mean, I realize they're out there, but it's just very wrong, and being done quietly makes it all the more potentially effective.
Yep. Yeah.
Funny thing about that is that these are all arguments that were, you know, handily dismissed, you know, geez, years ago. We've been hearing that those things, those old chestnuts for some time, and you know, they were handily dismissed years ago, and now we're some clueless guys bringing them back.
And the thing is, it's not like it's done without thought either. I mean, you know, you read the arguments, and the arguments are...
You mean other than the fact that the arguments don't hold water?
Other than that fact, yeah. But I mean, as far as the way it's all put together, it all seems quite logical. But a lot of it comes down to the basic notion that it's not like what we know, therefore it's bad. And that ability, and it's kind of clear, you know, from a Linux standpoint, reading this man's logic, is that he really is tied into a Microsoft mindset in terms of what an operating system is, and how, you know, the fact that it's got to be a monolith, it's got to be, in theory, the design of one mind, et cetera, et cetera. But it sort of ignores all of the other possibilities in the world.
Yeah. Well, this kind of thing is really easy to do when you're within a closed environment of your own community. Unfortunately, this past week I had been invited to participate in a Microsoft event. I think I told everybody about this a couple of weeks ago. But because of I was under the weather last week, wasn't able to show up. But I was invited to this MSDN.net conference, and I was very, very anxious to attend this conference because I had been at a number of conferences over the years, and the overt FUD attacks on products like Novell were pandemic at these kinds of conferences where you didn't have a challenging opinion voiced, and would have been interesting to see if that would have been evident in this conference last week. I'm hoping, if there's anybody listening from Microsoft, please invite me to one of your conferences again so I can show up. It's real interesting how that kind of FUD continues to permeate. Any more stories?
From the Linux Show webpage, you find the link to the Business Week Linux issue. And how long have I been waiting for this to occur?
Wonderful article.
I haven't had a chance to read it all, but the stuff I've read has been pretty good overall, especially for a kind of a standard business-oriented audience.
I think this is an important story.
Yes, it is.
I think everybody ought to be hammering on that issue, and all of the various Linux news sites and Linux portal sites around the country should be pointing people at the Business Week Linux issue, because they're not likely to do another one in the near future.
Right. But that does say quite a bit about a change in the world. When a publication like Business Week not focuses an article but an issue on something like Linux, then it doesn't make any sense for anyone to say that it's, you know, not ready. My God, how is this possible? This is definitely ready if it's getting their attention.
The articles are good too.
Yeah,
they're not just good; they're very good. I mean, this is well thought out stuff.
Yeah, well, it's incredible. If you get everybody run to the store, and if there's any left, go buy one, and it's just cover to cover.
But buy one for your boss. That's the other thing. If you're doing lobbying within your organization, get a copy of it and leave it on strategic desks. And this is the type of communication that tends to work in management circles.
Absolutely. But it's pretty incredible when you pick up the paper copy and you just keep on going from article to article and that article, and it's almost like reading Linux Journal doc.
No. Let's not insult doc. No.
Yeah.
Now, from a very low tech perspective, it's just surprisingly in depth coverage. I was impressed. So, any more?
Yeah, just a quickie, and that is that we've heard reports in the last few weeks of how I think it's Red Hat and Mandrake are both supporting their server editions of software for around a year or something like this these days, and SUSE is now supposedly extending the maintenance on their server to 5 years, which makes sense as a strategic move there. And I think that in the next year or so, we will see some flushing out of policies, probably lengthening of some and shortening of some others. But to make that the whole issue of support be more enterprise ready in terms of what companies want to be able to deploy Linux.
Yeah, they certainly want more than a year. That's for sure.
Yeah. And that, I mean, a lot of that, I think, is driven trying to derive revenues. But I think it will balance out before all is said and done at a little bit more sane levels. Now, I know that I had a couple other ones, but I know Doc was touching on them, too, so I'll leave those for Doc.
Okay. Well, Doc, I know you had sent me a couple of links about David Schutz leaving Microsoft. Have you had a...
Oh, no, Dave Stutz. Yeah. There is I don't know, is that on the...
That's on the link list, yeah.
It's on the link list, okay. Yeah, if you take a look at that, and if you look up the directory a little bit at Dave's site, you'll see that he identifies the piece, which is basically a warning, a manifesto to Microsoft about what he calls commodity software and the need to embrace commodity software and to embrace open source. That's just a very powerful document, and he calls it a sanitized version of a private email, I guess, that he sent to the people in charge of the company. He had actually sent me a note and a number of other people, I think, pointing to it and sort of announcing his news and saying perhaps he can have a stronger impact outside the company than he does in. If you recall, basically a year and a half ago at the Open Source Summit, the Open Source Conference in San Diego that O'Reilly holds every year, there was this great debate between Michael Tiemann and of Red Hat and Craig Mundy of Microsoft. And in that debate, there was a panel afterwards with Clay Shirky and a number of other notables, including Mundy. And Dave Stutz was on there, and he was referred to jokingly as Craig Mundy's mini-me. he is a bearded Unix guy from Central Casting. I mean, you know, he's one of us, you might say. He's mostly a BSD guy. He wrote the CLI, I think it's the Common Language Interface, he and his team write several million lines of code that are part of the open source part of .NET. He was involved in the shared source effort there and in sort of evangelizing that. And basically, here's he threw up his hands and left and said, guys, you're delusional if you don't think open source is going to kick everybody's ass. You need a solution. You need it fast. Very interesting document. And I've asked him for more, and he told me he's going to go chop wood and carry on. You know, he's taken some time off. He's got a farm up in Washington State somewhere, and I think that's what he's doing for a while.
He's been with Microsoft for a long time.
He's been there for a long time, but he's been very active. You know, he was at BSDCon last year. He's been in a number. I see him at a lot of conferences.
Yeah.
He's a familiar face and a seriously good guy. And
he's always had a tendency of sort of really low-keying the fact that he was an employee of my client.
Yes, definitely.
He's always worn like lug shirts and things like that.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, he's always played that irony very well. You know, I mean, he was an inside guy at Microsoft, and it was always known, you know, whenever you needed an example of a guy at Microsoft you could talk to, Dave was it. He was that guy, and not that there aren't others still there, but Dave was the highest profile guy, and now he's gone, and he's not just gone, but he left the salvo, and I thought it was a far more important document in many ways than the Halloween documents, because it wasn't a speculative internal thing. This is a guy, you know, making a public statement of delivering clues to Microsoft in a very big way, and very much worth reading. So that was A. And the other item is the Desktop Linux Summit, which was, as not advertised, a primarily Lindos event. Lindos hosted it at the Vivendi International, former MP3.com space, in San Diego. I would guess around 300 some people were there. I heard different estimates, but there was around that many. And it was, I found it very interesting. I took a lot of notes, and I'm still putting them together into a piece for Linux Journal. It'll probably come out sometime tomorrow. I was hoping we'd have more done before now, but it's just been hard to kind of pull all the notes together and the recordings and everything else and the business cards. The big news there was that Lindos, a software company, came out with a piece of hardware that nobody else is willing to do, or has been able to do in quite the same way. I've got it over here to my right. In fact, I'm using it right now. It's called a mobile PC. It's a $799 notebook. It's got FireWire and a couple USB ports and Ethernet and the rest of it, and it's got a VIA board in it, and it's made by some guys in Taiwan. And it appears to be pretty sturdy. It's got a nice, pretty, 1024 by 768 screen. Lasts a couple hours on batteries, maybe a little less. It's got a quiet fan. It's generic. It's absolutely generic, but it's the right size. It's at 2.9 pounds, you're talking about something that weighs about as much as a book or less, about the same size. And it runs nicely, and I rather like what Lindos has done with the UI. They've got a thing called Click and Run that I think is a terrific model for an open source business. They charge a fee for, a yearly fee, and then, some additional stuff for some software. But a lot of the free stuff, they just make it easy to install it. So I had my 6-year-old son, who's learning to read now, or knows how to read, install a bunch of software on it, and he's able to do it. And so when we rode back on the train from San Diego to Santa Barbara, he got to play with a bunch of games that he downloaded using this Click and Run thing. But the interesting thing about it is they have a relationship there with their customers. That's a new thing. That's kind of an interesting thing to me, that one of the things we got out of Clutrain after the book came out was that markets are not only conversations, markets are relationships. Well, these guys have a relationship with customers. It's where it goes, I don't know. I mean, it's a new thing, and I'm just kind of looking at it right now and seeing what it means. But they're very adrenalized. I mean, a lot of people have given them some grief for their manners in respect to the people who were setting up the program in the first place and some other stuff like that. But this laptop was a hit with the audience, I'll tell you that. And everybody who was playing with it liked it a lot. And I like it a lot. And I just got... some news in sort of deep background from some people who knew people at IBM and some of the other companies that none of the big suspects, IBM or Dell or HP or Gateway or Sony, have plans to come out with a Linux laptop right now. That the the relationships with Microsoft are too strong at all of those companies, including IBM. Now, I've heard from other people, hold still, just wait, it will happen. In fact, one of the guys at the show said that. But, you know, credit where due, I think. Windows came out with an actual box that's at an affordable price. One guy called it a sysadmin's PDA, which it is. You can open a shell and do all the usual stuff here. So anyway, so that was an interesting thing to me. And that to me was like sort of the big story there. The rest of it is sort of, we'll see how it sorts out. But that was an interesting story.
Yeah, I was very impressed by the laptop as well. I've been one of those people who have been very critical of Windows in the past.
And Michael Robertson, who I talked to, did say he is interested in coming on the show.
Well, they didn't show up tonight.
Were they invited for tonight?
Yep.
Okay, well, let me see what I can do. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, maybe I'll get somewhere where you didn't. Who knows? We'll see.
Okay. We'll see. I'm really surprised that after a solid month of saying that they were going to come on the show, that they never returned any of the email. But that's a privilege. So we'll see what happens in the future. So, Arnie, do you have any stories for us this week?
Yeah, I got some shorties here. And the first one is that Hannaford Brothers rolls out Linux point-of-sale solution on WinCore Nixdorf Beetle POS systems. And what Nixdorf has done, and they're always good in hardware integration, they've always been these nice special-purpose devices. What they've done is put together a point-of-sale system which is being rolled out by Hannaford, which owns some grocery store chains in the northeast part of the United States. And they're using an embedded Linux kernel, and they're basically putting as much stuff in RAM, no moving parts, that means no hard drives, and basically it's got two displays, one for the customer and a touch display for the cashier, a whole plethora of devices, you know, scanners and stuff like that. And they're basically rolling this out chain-wide. All runs on Linux. All runs on embedded Linux. And there was an interesting article related to this by our good old friend Rob Limo on NewsForge about the operating system less... a computer without an operating system, that they're doing some interesting stuff with BIOS. And, of course, many people's take on that was that, you know, gee, how are you going to get rid of the operating system? It still has to have some kind of API for applications. And this is kind of, BIOS. Is this BIOS or is this an operating system? Well, it's Linux, but it runs out of ROM. Kind of neat, interesting story there. And we're seeing how far Linux has seeped into the embedded market. It's kind of interesting.
Got more?
Oh, yeah. There's a new online magazine from Australia. And David in New Zealand, you ought to be interested in this. It's called LinMag AU. And the link should be up on the Linux Show site. It's to launch this Friday. And it's targeted local content, local people, for Australia and New Zealand. And what's interesting about this whole thing started at the Perth Linux Users Group, and they're going with it, and that's kind of interesting. Go to your Linux user groups; they're good. let's see, another one from enterpriselinux.com. Red Hat debating enterprise Linux momentum futile. This is an interview with Mark DeVisser of Red Hat. I can go read that. That's kind of interesting. He talks about a variety of business issues at Red Hat. And good article. Let's see, one more. Opera shows graceful. Our good friend Joe Barr has got an article in LinuxWorld.com. Opera shows graceful, humorous response to Microsoft Blunder, and he talks about the latest release of Opera 7.0, which is the browser, Linux browser, and he comments on very humorously on Opera's decision to take and make MSN sites come out Borkized, that is, Borkized, make them sound like the Swedish chef on the Muppets. And they put that code into one of their beta test versions, and I guess people are enjoying MSN with the Bork, Bork, Bork. And the last one is the clueless link of the week, Fear Holds Back Linux Adaptation. And here we go, by Peter Williams at VNUnet.com. And U.S. firms unwilling to put faith in open source for mission-critical apps. And, of course, all the old arguments are out here as well. And, of course, okay, here we go. This study organization is AMR, and they interviewed senior IT managers in 15 U.S. companies with an average turnover of over $1 billion. Well, you know, this is amazing. He interviewed all of 15 U.S. companies, and his decision is that Linux, that people fear Linux, and that's why it's holding back the Linux's adaptation. And, you know, guys, go at it. Let this guy give this guy some clue.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with you. In terms of clueless articles of the week, this is a really good candidate for it.
Yeah.
I had read through this article as well. And
I mean, it's not a bad article. It's just that all their conclusions are based on 15 people. I mean, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, they're using a really, really limited scope to use as evidence. The managers of 15 U.S. companies. They're big, but still, I don't know if you can use this as a basis of judgment at all.
Well, what's interesting is that the article also states, and the study also states, that although, you know, what they're looking for is Linux adaptation enterprise-wide. I mean, from like wall to wall. And you're not going to see that. You're not going to see that anywhere because Linux isn't the solution to everything. And there's still people who want their Microsoft Office and their whatever else they're using. You know, there's some servers that run better on Sun. You know, let's face it. A monolithic thing isn't good. And who said that Linux everywhere is the best thing? It's not. You know, it's good where it belongs, works well.
Okay, is that it this week?
That's it.
Kevin, I know you got a review this week. Have you successfully downloaded, installed, and tried Mozilla?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty good release, especially if you got Red Hat 8.0. There's a GTK2 compatible version with the XFT font stuff, so it's looking really slick. And now in the mail program, they have the Bayesian spam filtering, which actually works quite well just right out of the box. And then as you use it, there's a button to classify something that gets through as spam or something that gets mislabeled as not spam, and it actually learns that goes along and does quite well. Now, one trick I did find out a lot of people had problems with is if you have Evolution installed and you install the latest Mozilla, it breaks Evolution because Evolution was missing a dependency in the RPM, apparently. And the trick is to add an extra line to the scld.so.conf with the Mozilla lib directory in it.
Could you repeat that one more time? Add what?
Yeah, the trick is there's a file in etc called ld.so.conf that says where to look for shared libraries, and you need to add an entry for the latest Mozilla lib directory.
Yeah. Okay.
That'll fix it. But other than that, it's looks like it's a pretty solid release. It keeps getting faster and doesn't seem to suck up quite as much memory.
Pretty solid for a beta, huh?
Yep. And now with the GTK2 compile, cut and paste is working a bit better in between everything.
Okay. Is that the only product released this week?
Yep, so far.
Okay, well, I have one more story I'll throw out for the whole group. And feel free that anybody can comment on this. I spent a lot of time sort of grieving over this. Happened to be home for most of the second half of next week because I was sick. And so, unfortunately, I got to watch the FCC hearings conclude on TV last week, and then watched the report come out of the FCC on Thursday. And first, ironically, for those of you who aren't aware of what is going on here with the FCC, I've got a couple of links on the website that you can refer to. But bottom line, please do read these links, but bottom line, if you are unaware of what is going on, the telcos have been bleeding from every orifice for the last couple of years. Stock prices are way down. Things have just not
They've been failing,
on.
Just simply failing.
Pardon?
They've been failing.
Yeah, they've been totally failing. And so, of course, the fault of this failure is that these pesky ISPs have been beating up on these big multinational telcos. And so, time and time again, since 1996, the telcos have gone to the FCC and asked for relief from the 1996 Telecommunications Deregulation Act so that they can better compete against these, 7,000-some-odd mom-and-pop companies that are sprinkled around the United States. Even though literally thousands of ISPs wrote to the FCC, very little opportunity was given to actually voice arguments before the committee. The people who went before the committee were the usual suspects, the lobbyists of the telecommunications companies, the executives of telecommunications companies. And by that, what I really mean is not just the phone companies, but the cable companies as well. And so the net result was a change in the rules of the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And if you were to have listened to the news reports that came out on Thursday afternoon and Friday, you would have thought that this was a major defeat, a major blow to the phone companies, and that this was a disaster for the phone companies, because they basically this judgment was being given by the pundits because the phone companies didn't get everything that they asked for. But everything was really pretty much totally irrelevant, because they got one word, the most important word added to the relief section of the Telecommunications Act. And I know this gets pretty complicated for people, but there's something called the UNE that is used by cable companies and phone companies. Now, UNE is an unbundled network element, and unbundled network elements are the reasons why ISPs were able to exist from the beginning. ISPs were able to put up modems, buy phone lines, and let people dial into them without the phone companies charging ISPs for extensive overusage of those phone lines, because those phone lines are an unbundled network element. And so historically, the FCC has tried to use these UNEs, these unbundled network elements, as ways to create opportunities for competition and for innovation. They basically learned from the ISPs that it was possible, and so they created a new class of company called a CLEC, Competitive Local Exchange Carrier, to make it possible for the vision of the future of this, you know, broadband universe that we're supposed to have. And so the 1996 Telecommunications Deregulation Act really was difficult for ISPs to survive through. But they managed. They managed. The big deal about this most recent ruling is in the relief section, and what I mean by relief section is that the relief is certain things are removed from requirements to be unbundled, that they are exempt from the 1996 Act. And the word that they added was packet switched. Okay, so that's two words. Okay, so bottom line, by adding the words packet switched to the relief section of the rules that govern this act, they have basically put a tool in the hands of the telcos and the cable companies to hand them a monopoly to the last mile of the internet, and an excuse to basically tell ISPs to go get screwed. This will require, if an ISP wants to offer internet service, it will require that the ISP also offer phone service. And this basically is a death knell for the American ISP. They will not survive if this rule stands. There's not a chance that they're going to be able to compete, because your typical mom-and-pop ISP does not have the $350,000 it costs to buy a 5E switch to provide phone service. This is a very sad turn of events, and the irony that blows me away is, again, you read the press reports and you think it sounds as if the FCC beat up on the phone companies, when in reality they handed them a monopoly, a guaranteed monopoly, and I think the FCC should just be utterly ashamed of themselves for what they're doing to literally thousands and thousands and thousands of small businesses across the United States. And it grieves me because, well, Doc, a year ago, you and I were talking about the Towson-Dingle Act, right?
Right.
About a year. The Towson-Dingle Act was a legislative attempt to accomplish exactly what I just described. And the people in Congress had the brains to realize that this was a really stupid idea to obfuscate the people who really created the commercial part of the internet. So the Towson-Dingle bill was stopped. I mean, it's still out there, but for all intents and purposes, it's never going to get out of committee. And so because they couldn't get the Towson-Dingle Act through, they did it in the FCC instead. So here again, just like CARP, when they can't do it with legislation, they do it through a committee. It's absolutely taxation without representation. I don't know what else to call it, but it's theft of the internet.
Have other operators and ISPs and so forth weighed in on this thing, Jeff?
Oh, yeah. Literally, all the ISP associations that I'm a member of have literally sent thousands of letters to the FCC begging Michael Powell to allow us to speak. They don't. They don't.
Now, Powell, that was the whole thing played as a defeat for Powell. What happened there?
Yeah, it played again. this is what's amazing on this. The thing that was amazing, this defeat of Powell, is that the phone companies didn't get everything they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There were some lines that were drawn in the sand. Yes, it's possible. If you have millions and millions and millions of dollars so that you can start providing phone service for your local community, you can stay in business. But bottom line, look at the ISPs in the United States. Bottom line, there's maybe four that are going to be able to offer national phone service and continue to exist as a nationwide ISP.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the 7,000-some-odd additional ISPs and web hosting services are going to get crushed. Absolutely crushed. They will not be able to compete. The first major impact that you're going to see out of these FCC rules is DSL prices for a new service are going to skyrocket. If there's anybody out there that has been thinking about getting DSL and has put it off because it's been too expensive, you better go sign a contract right now, because a year from now, DSL service could be double its price right now.
In the meantime, George Gilder had a piece in the Wall Street Journal in which he, just before this ruling went down, in which he begged the FCC to essentially deregulate the thing rather than go in the other direction, pointing out that right now, if you want a 12 megabyte symmetrical connection in Japan or Korea, it's going to cost you about $12 a month. In other words, it's, you know, they've got a system over there where real wide bandwidth is being rolled out everywhere, and we're looking at creating regulatory conditions in which it'll never happen here.
Oh yeah.
You know, the country that led this stuff, that invented much of this stuff, is falling behind fast right now, especially behind Asia. But it's not so true not so much the case in Europe. But.
And Doc, the reason why is evident. It's because the phone companies and the cable companies have gotten legislative support to squeeze out the innovators, to squeeze out the ISPs. Had the spirit of the original act been lived up to, even though it was painful for ISPs, we probably would have broadband across the United States right now. Kevin and I used to be associated with a different ISP back in the 1996-1997 time frame, a company by the name of Worldwide Access. We were one of the largest ISPs in the Midwest. And we were offering DSL service back in 1996 on a limited basis because the technology was new. But I know this date by heart. October the 21st, 1997, Ameritech SBC pulled the rug out from under us and refused to sell us copper any longer. They did not have their own DSL service in one CO in the entire Midwest, but they refused to sell copper to any ISP from that day forward.
Mm.
Now, had they let the ISPs in Chicago, and Chicago at that time was a strong ISP town, there would have been cheap DSL and cheap cable over internet all over the place. But they used the original 1996 Act as a sledgehammer to attempt to crush competition, and in doing so, they crushed innovation. Because it's the little companies that innovate, it's not the big companies.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sad, and that's why the title of tonight's show is The Day the Internet Died, because I think if something is not done soon, if something is not done, damn, I wish I could sit with Michael Powell and shake him and tell him what he's doing. But
I think he doesn't know.
Doc, you either have to be corrupt or being told so much by so many people from the lobbying groups that you think that what they're telling you is correct.
Mm.
But they're ignoring 7,000 small businesses. They just are. They're ignoring them. And you would think, you know, United States, land of the free, home of the brave, the American ideal, small business, entrepreneurism, you would think they would take 7,000 businesses into consideration rather than seven businesses. Seven businesses that are dinosaurs, that are bleeding from the seams. But no, they don't. And it's because, you know, even though these companies are bleeding at the seams, they still have billion-dollar lobbying budgets as long as their stock price holds up. But no, it's a sad day because just like with Towson Dingle, and all, a lot of people say I'm crazy when I say things like this, but I believe this. I believe once the last mile is actually controlled by a handful of companies, then it is not too far for those small handful of companies to start controlling the content that flows over to that last mile. And so when you whittle that last mile down to the four remaining RBOC and the three remaining major cable companies, when you're looking at those seven or maybe eight companies, the Internet will turn into a DRM network, and it will no longer be the Internet. And I don't think that is a rash statement on my point.
Yeah, in fact, I think that's your strongest statement so far. Because you have to follow this where it's going and where they want it to go.
Yeah.
And that's what they wanted it in the first place, and that's what they want to get by the regulatory regime and not by the competitive marketplace.
Yeah, that's right.
That's it. And that's why they never wanted a symmetrical net in the first place. That's why they wanted to do deals with Hollywood, all that stuff.
Yep. And it's very sad. This is a really sad day. Our last Thursday was a really sad day in the United States. Now, we got to take a break because we're over time and we've got a guest for our second segment. But next week, and I'm forewarning people who are listening to the show tonight, next week, although we won't be discussing the story in detail, I'm going to have some links on the site for next week's show. I'm going to be asking for volunteers, primarily from people who are in the United States. I know we get a lot of volunteers from outside, but this is a domestic regulatory issue, so even though your help would be appreciated, you pretty much have to be a voter to make this work. But I'm going to be looking for some volunteers to help us out in terms of writing emails to as many groups as possible so that the FCC is contacted by people outside of the ISP industry groups. The ISP industry groups have a biased focus from the standpoint of the government, because for every ISP group that represents small ISPs, you've got another ISP group that represents MSN and AOL. And so,
what about Earthlink? Where do they fall in this?
Earthlink would be in with the AOL MSN
mm-hmm.
monopolists. And so none of them can be counted on to help. I mean, this is why Microsoft's been buying into cable companies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is no mystery here. This is why .NET is an ideal technology for DRM. You know? It's not a mystery how all this stuff hooks together. I know I sound like a conspiracy theorist right now, but I'm not. So, we do have to take a break. So, Kevin, why don't you put on a tune? The feature artist of the month is Judy Roberts, for all those of you who have been asking who's the music playing. www.judyroberts.com. Go buy one of her CDs. She's been nice enough to give us some of her music to play at the website, so I encourage you to check her out. She's a really great performer here in Chicago. We'll take a few minutes break and come back with segment number two of the February 25th edition of The Linux Show. Be right back.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the sponsors who make The Linux Show possible. I'd like to thank VA Linux. Oops, no, they're not VA Linux anymore. They are now VA Software. Hope they don't change their name again pretty soon. I'm going to have to make another commercial. But check out VA Software and learn all about the SourceForge development platform for internal company development projects. Or if you're just a little guy but want to get a flavor of it all, check out SourceForge.net and spread the word on open source development platforms.
while swearing off a game of golf. I may make a play for the kettle, but when I do, I don't follow through, because my heart belongs to Ben. If I invite a guy tonight to dine out to Fortune and Hattie, this is your he's asking for more, but my heart belongs to Daddy. My heart belongs to Daddy. Simply could it be better? And my heart belongs to Daddy. It's bad, 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 bad. Want to warn you, Daddy, so I think you're perfectly sweet. My heart belongs to Daddy, because my daddy, he treats us so well.
It is Tuesday night. It is the 25th. Can anybody hear me?
I can.
Can all hear you. It's the Linux Show, and we're into segment number two. Before we bring in Jason, I do want to take care of a couple of clerical items that I should have done at the beginning of the show, but I wanted to make sure that we had plenty of people out there listening, because we need your help. We always do need your help. And we're always honest with our begging, but this show is, it takes a lot of time. There's a lot of us on the panel that do this for free, and without the support of our handful of sponsors, people like Eviblio and IDFS, this show would not exist. And it continues week after week after week, month after month, to get more and more expensive to pull the show off. So we're coming up with ways to subsidize the cost of the internal operations part. We've got our bandwidth bill, which is significantly the most expensive part. We've got that covered. If we didn't have it covered, we wouldn't be talking to you right now. It's just that simple. But there's a new section to our website that is there tonight. Hope you regulars didn't get scared away by it. But it's help support the Linux Show. We want to draw your attention to this because we do need your support. There's a number of different ways you can support us. There is the Become a Sponsor opportunity. You can go to PayPal and donate $1. If you have a little bit more money, donate $50 and sponsor a show, or $150 and sponsor an entire month full of shows. $150 covers, about half to two-thirds of our monthly phone bill. And so if we get one or two people as monthly sponsors, hey, we're going to be in good shape if that kind of thing continues. We do have the Register a Domain program that has been running since the middle of January. It's actually been doing pretty well. To date, we've raised about $80 on the Register a Domain program. So a good portion of our phone bill for January was covered with all the domains that have been registered. We also have another program, speaking of DSL, and we were just talking in the last segment about if you're going to get DSL, you better think about getting it quick. We have just set up a deal through one of our ISPs and our ISP partner group, a company by the name of Bandwave, that is going to put together a program. This is business service only, and it's business radical service, and there is an email link. But the first several months of the service are going to only be $69 a month for 1.5 over 768K business service. That is damn cheap. And so just email us, and we'll get you hooked up with the appropriate people. If you do any of those things, it will bring a few bucks into the coffers here at the Linux Show and allow us to keep bringing you the show every week. But heck, you know, if you're just a listener and you just enjoy what we're doing, just go to PayPal and send us $5. We'll appreciate everything that you can afford to give us. So let's go ahead and jump into segment number two of the show tonight. We originally had scheduled for tonight, we were going to have the guys from Windows and the guys from Acorus come on and do a head-to-head comparison of the Windows versus Acorus products and compare them. Unfortunately, because of perhaps my over-verbose treatment of Windows during the last month and a half, they have declined to show up tonight.
A shame.
What a shame. So being nice to Jason from Acorus, we said, what the heck, we'll give you all of the time.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And allow you to bring us up to date with what's going on at Acorus and bring us up to date on the Desktop LX as well as the productivity pack and what's new. Now, this isn't a criticism, Jason, but
yeah.
I do have to tell you, I emailed you guys weekly for about a month and a half prior to the show for somebody to send me an updated copy of LX so that I could review it before the show.
I never saw that.
And I never got it.
What did you send it to? What was the address? Did you send it to me?
The half of the people who work for your company at Acorus.com.
Right. That's really strange because I actually didn't see that come across, and I would have been happy to give you
I'll send you copies, okay?
Yeah.
I don't want to pick on you, but I would appreciate if you could do that fairly quickly because we don't have any way of verifying the things that you're saying to us.
It slices, it dices, it doubles as a prom dress. And
okay, that's what we want.
All the geeks that need a prom.
Look at all those tomato slices, every seed in place.
Absolutely. So yeah, I will. I apologize for that, and I'll make sure that it gets out to you tomorrow.
Okay, but that way, in a week or two after I've had a chance to load it up. You know, I don't know if you heard the Doc talking about the Windows. He was impressed with Windows. I did the same thing here at home back in August when you guys gave me the Amethyst version.
Yeah. Actually, Amethyst is the current version. We're just on a newer update.
Yeah, you're on a newer update, and it has the productivity pack thing on it now, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically, thanks for having me on the show and being kind enough to give me the time that's left over when my friendly competitor, Windows, can't be here. It's very interesting. I just want to tell you a little story. I was at the Consumer Electronics Show, CES, and that was the first time that I actually got to meet somebody from Windows. And it was a very interesting time. I actually was inside a luncheon there. And sure enough,
I got to meet somebody from Lindo's and shake their hand, and it got to be very real. And it's interesting because I think that our companies are coming at a problem or coming to a consumer need from a little bit different perspective. And that's always neat. I really would have loved to have had the chance tonight to talk and explain our perspectives and hear what they have to say as well. So I'm kind of, bummed out, I guess you could say, because I really wanted to get a chance.
Well, tell us about what your perspective is.
Sure. Actually, the way that we see Desktop LX and, you know, Lycoris's position in the market is that our goal is to give people the best impression of Linux possible, because we know that Linux is good, and you know, there's a lot of people, you know, who are technically oriented, and the programmers who work at Lycoris, and all of us in the Linux community know that Linux has some wonderful strengths, and it can function as a desktop if you have a certain level of knowledge. And you know, distros are getting better and better at making that, you know, that knowledge barrier lower and lower. But there's still just some wheels that needed to get greased in order for it to get onto the desktop and for a Linux desktop solution to be viable to people who they don't even understand what Linux is and what it has to offer and things like that. So originally, Redmond Linux was the name of our company. It was started by Joseph Cheek. He used to work for Microsoft. And the original vision was to make Linux easy enough for his grandmother to use. That was the phrase that he liked to use. And so we started out, you know, this was in 2000, back when Linux wasn't nearly as easy to use as it is even today, because we are all amazed at the rapid progress of open source software, simply because by nature it has, you know, it's the nature of the beast is that things get worked on by so many hands and so many eyes that progress can be rapid. So one of the things that we wanted to do was, you know, simplify the interface. So we took, you know, Caldera's Open Linux, and we simplified the menus on it, and we tried to set up things so that it was ready to go out of the box for Flash. Java was pre-installed, and the browser, you know, had the plugins for RealPlayer, and you know, RealPlayer was on board. Acrobat was, you know, installed. All these things were kind of sort of plugged in and ready to go out of the box, so you didn't have to do the complicated, to normal people, complicated process of, you know, running a command line or unzipping a tarball to install Acrobat Reader. So, for example. So it's just those little kind of things that we think that we can show Linux in a good light. We think it has something to offer. We think there's a little bit of a broader audience that can be reached and can see the value in Linux as a desktop if we can just make those tweaks prior to them getting their hands on the product.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where we stand. What we're trying to accomplish is to basically give people the best impression of Linux that's possible.
You also, though, do have, if I'm correct, because this is one of the things that from the version that I was given back July or whenever it was last year, that you were adding with the next released was the same kind of thing that Doc was just talking about that Lindo's was offering, where you had a one-click install.
Yeah, it's just not the same part of our business plan, though, that I think that Lindo's, from what I know, is, you know, they charge you $99 to get in and get software from their warehouse and things like that. And it sort of becomes an integral part of their business plan, and where the software doesn't mean so much as kind of like a set-top box. It's not, the value isn't in the set-top box or the printer. It's in the cartridges that you buy afterwards. You know, it's in the content that gets delivered. So, and that's an interesting way to look at it, but I think that a lot of that software that's in the warehouse is already available on the net for free. And I think that that's sort of charging people for something that's already existing out there without adding any value to it is something that we at Lycoris really don't believe in. It's kind of...
But you still make it available.
Yeah, absolutely, which is what we do. We actually, Iris, which is the Internet Rapid Installer for Software, basically what we do for Iris is it's a one-click download of software onto your Desktop LX machine. The packages are already ready to go, but we're not charging them for a monthly fee or a yearly fee to, you know, to have that. Instead, it's included in the price of the OS. So whatever you pay for the OS, it's $29.95 for Desktop LX. you get unlimited access to Iris, download as many apps as you want, whatever, for as long as that version of Desktop LX is supported.
What's your packaging manager?
Oh, it's a Red Hat package manager.
Okay.
It's RPM. RPM-based. So that's, you know, it's a little bit of a turn on the model, we still want to make it easy for people to install. We think one-click installation without the headaches. You know, these are all, you know, set up, all where the dependencies are satisfied and everything because, you know, we're just making, you know, making it so it's available for our OS. So it's already, you know, all that's taken care of, and all they have to do is click. So it's very easy for somebody who doesn't have, you know, any Linux knowledge or doesn't want to go to RPM find and understand the, you know, the version that they need to find and that kind of stuff. It takes that out of the equation, and instead, it's very mindless, you know, single click, ooh, I like that picture, I want to try this open source app, and they can click it and run it.
No shareable library hell?
Huh?
No shareable library hell?
We pre-sort that out for you.
Well, you know, Windows has got the DLL hell. I mean, you know, Linux has got to have shareable library hell to balance it off.
Right. Exactly. And one of the advantages is that we're the ones who are packaging the software for Iris. So since it's us, we can sort that stuff out beforehand.
That's good.
Yeah. But we don't want to charge for it because it's really, you know, we're not taking these open source apps and changing them, making them a little easier to use, beefing up the UI, doing the things that we do to, say, OpenOffice, or doing the things that we do to our OS. We're just taking them off the net in the state that they are, the ones that are more mature, and making the packages available. And so we're not really adding that much value, so we don't think it's right to charge. Do you know what I'm saying?
So no $99 a year fee.
No $99 yearly fee.
That's the bottom line then.
Right.
Okay. Now, one of the criticisms that I voiced to you guys back last summer still seems to be, from those people who have contacted me about your product, still seems to be not really a problem in terms of the functionality, but more of a cosmetic issue.
Mm-hmm.
Really, this is one of these really difficult calls to make, and I can understand why you guys
did it. I already know where you're going with it. Is why does it work and look like Windows?
Why does it look like XP?
Sure. And that's an easy question for us to answer because of our focus. Our focus is to take the desktop users now who are currently using Windows and get them to use Desktop LX, get them to use Linux. And we think that the easiest way to do that is to minimize the shock, and it's already a little different. Linux is already a little different. You got to admit that when you use it. You know, it's not exactly like being in a Windows world.
Yep.
And so what we want to do is just minimize the shock. And we're not saying our product's going to look like XP forever. But in order to get some market penetration, you have to, play alike what people are currently using so that they can feel comfortable with it.
And I agree with you. But when are you going to come out with a version that just doesn't look like XP, that's all?
When?
That should be something fairly trivial.
Yeah. I
give them enlightenment as a download.
What I want to tell you is, when are we going to come out with something? You can change the look and feel already. I mean, if you want to be able to change it, it's as flexible as any other, you know, version of KDE or any other window manager is. You can change it so that you use whatever icons you like. We have an entire gallery of screenshots who have changed our operating system to look like something I have never seen before.
Yeah.
Every single person has it changed unique because our community is full of Linux users. Many of them heart have that, I want my desktop to be unique feeling.
Okay, let me go into a little bit more depth on this, and this could be utter nonsense too, because remember this is fueled by people who have sent me emails about your product. Okay,
knock yourself out.
For some reason, when I get on the show and I recommend, you know, go out and get this and do the granny proof test and things like that, and people actually do that, for some reason, there's this psychological barrier that people within the Linux community have in their minds when they don't want to leave their friend that they've just installed with a machine that looks like Linux. And so then the logic of that stream would be, well, yeah, why don't you change it for them before they leave? I don't know. I'm really torn on this. It's hard for me to get a firm grasp on this. It really may be no big deal.
Well, you just said that they don't want to leave them with a machine that looks like Linux. Is that what you meant to say?
Like Windows.
Oh.
Excuse me.
Okay.
I slipped. Slip of my tongue.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean that we've really experienced it being a sort of a 50-50 type situation. And the type of audience that we're catering to is less of a Linux-oriented audience simply because of the nature of the product and the market penetration we want to have. I mean, not that there's not, we want to give Linux people something easy to use. We just know that they've already bought their distro, and they love the flexibility and love to have the compiler, and there's a lot of different things that we specifically don't offer because we think there are other companies that do that better. There are other companies that do that better, and so we don't want to compete there. We want to compete where there's no companies doing it well,
yep.
And that is on the desktop, and
yep.
Do it with a simple, you know, trimmed-down version so that it's more of a cohesive operating system, and the look and feel is part of that. So you have to choose one way or the other how it's going to look.
How are you finding the desktop apps market? I mean, you're firmly in that market now.
Yeah.
And of course, you know the standard argument is, we can't run Windows because it doesn't run Word, you know, or you name it.
You it know,
the chronic wine.
It sounds like they've left their mark on you.
Yeah, well, no, I'm talking about the wine that you get. It doesn't run Word. It doesn't run, what are you finding?
We're finding less that people are worried about running Word, per se, and they're more worried about, am I going to be able to use the things that I have now? In other words, am I going to be able to use all these documents that I have? I have all these Word documents. Am I going to be able to talk to my friend who has Word? They're more worried about fitting in the world, and sometimes the quickest way to fit in the world is just to use Word. But if you can tell them, look, you can fit in that world, all you have to do is use an alternative application. Let's say you can use OpenOffice, or you can use Productivity Pack. In our case, we sell a product that's easy to install and looks, you know, and we say, look, it may not be perfect, but then again, Word, 95 and Word XP don't talk to each other very well either. So you can basically have
or different versions of Word.
You can have the same degree of happiness and live in that same world with our
product.
What
are you finding? What is your market what is your market results tell you? What do they tell you? What's your marketing tell you?
We haven't had people return the Office Suite.
You have not had people return the Office Suite.
Not a single copy.
Now, how are you marketing it? Is it bundled?
No. It's a separate product that if someone wants what we bundle with the OS, I'll actually tell you a little bit about why we don't bundle the Office Suite with the OS really quick. But let me first tell you what we do bundle with the OS is like a light Office Suite, K-Office. We all know K-Office.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for certain things, for people who want to write letters and have limited, interface with Microsoft Word documents and that type of thing. It's good at what it does. It does a very limited set of things. It does them well. But if you want to go beyond that and you want to start chaining documents with people and moving up, a spreadsheet that has macro capability and all this stuff, you can't use that. You have to step up to a product. It's similar to the way that Microsoft Works is with, Microsoft
right.
Windows. A lot of times it's thrown in there as a whatever. OEMs pay something like a dollar for Works. It's just wrong. Okay. Anyway, so you've got that same situation with Desktop LX, where we bundle that Light Office Suite, and if you have greater needs, you can buy our Productivity Pack. We don't think that it's a great idea to bundle a full Office Suite with the operating system, something as potent as, say, Microsoft Office, which, Star Office or Open Office or Productivity Pack, they are. They're on that level. And
right.
The reason is because there's a couple of good reasons, really good reasons, when you're talking about the market. One is, we certainly don't want to tell Microsoft that, hey, it's okay to bundle your Office Suite with the OS. Go ahead. I don't know a single person who wants to say that that's okay. I'm not saying that they would, but it's wonderful evidence when they can point to their competitors in the marketplace and say, hey, look, they're bundling. Let me. The last thing I want to do is, I think that we need to bundle less, and that's one of the things that we're trying to do. The other argument is that if you're trying to create a platform for desktop applications, one of the surest ways to upset people like Hancom or AppliXware or any of those people who are making an Office suite is to bundle one if you're the OS company. What does that say to you if you're a developer of an application that the OS company bundles? It says, I'm sorry, but you can't sell your product because we just gave one away to free to our customers. That is the surest way to kill a burgeoning market for an application for the desktop.
That's where I was going.
And those are the two reasons why we don't do it, and we never will. And if people want a bundled Office suite, they want to beg us to bundle OpenOffice, I'm sorry. I just won't step on the throat of the people who I want to turn around and ask to help me in about a year when I've got market share.
And so tell me, this begs the question, how are the sales going for the Office suite?
Okay. They're about one for every two of the OS.
Not bad.
No, not bad at all, because we offer value to the product. If you look at it from a market perspective, our market wants things to be easy. OpenOffice might be free, but the question is it easy? Is it going to set up your file associations for you? Is it going to look like the OS? Is it going to just kind of smooth that mental gap that people get? It's weird. When you step into the consumer marketplace, there's this weird mental gap. You want people's synapses to jump over. And so that's what we try to do.
Is Russ still in the room?
Yeah, I'm here.
What do you think, Russ?
He's all quiet on the Western Front.
Well, I've been studying. There's a stack of questions from IRC. Let me hit you with a question.
I love it. I love to hear that people are out there listening and they care.
Okay. Is KDE 3.0 currently supported and bundled?
Well, you think about it. It's an operating system. And so right now, the operating system is built on a kernel version, a version of KDE, and that's what Amethyst is. Amethyst is KDE 2.2. And so while we're in version Amethyst, that's going to stay. It's part of another thing is keeping an OS stable so that you're not always advancing it forward to the latest and greatest, because you kind of want to show software developers that you're not going to do that every 5 months or 2 months or 1 month. You want to show them that there's some stability involved. So that's one of the reasons why we haven't moved to KDE 3. But yes, KDE 3 compatibility is definitely on our list, so that you could download the most recent KDE 3 apps. We'll be moving to KDE 3 as a desktop for Beryl, which is our next major release.
Okay. Another question is, how does your software deal with laptops and wireless cards?
Sure. How does it deal with them? Well,
or how well does it deal with them?
Yeah, I want to give you anecdotal evidence first, and then I want to talk about, some of the interesting things we've encountered in building an OS, you know, that people expect to just work right out of the box with hardware and stuff like that. I have a Dell Latitude, C810, and when I put Desktop LX on it, it installs. I have to choose one of the video install options, you know, in order, because it has a special, you know, it has a video card that the built-in drivers for, you have to upload them after the fact. So once I get over that hurdle, that's the only thing on this laptop that I have to get around in order to have it, let's say, you know, work beautifully. 3D acceleration then works, because we all know that NVIDIA drivers are beautiful once you have them loaded. And the wireless card that I have is a Linksys wireless card. It plugs in, and it works beautifully. Now, this is the thing. There is a hardware configuration thing you have to do to get the wireless card to work. It's just one of those things that Linux isn't automatic about right now. You have to touch a file. There's a little file in there you have to actually alter. And you can do that through the GUI as opposed to the command line, because you can just pop up a text editor and make it, you know, create it. And we have, in our knowledge base, we have a ton of articles with how to deal with those little things. Like if there's a little piece of hardware that needs a little, you know, this or that. It's not the most elegant solution, but it offers a choice, and we've made it easy for people, easier than saying, well, here, you got to go to the website and do whatever the manufacturer tells you. We try to make it very specific to the OS. So laptops in general, we've got great support for most of the hardware and laptops. Win modems, as of update 3, will have ConnectSent, Intel, PCTel, Lucent, and those are the major ones that are selling right now. We'll have support for all those WIN modems, and so that's actually pretty good. And that's one of the biggest hurdles in laptops.
Is that you have any WIN modems is good.
Thank you. Well, we try.
I've got a question for you.
I just wanted to finish up by saying, because the hardware in laptops sometimes is more esoteric, it's just harder for Linux in general. And if we can get our hands on the hardware, we try to bridge those gaps. And because we got my hands on the hardware for my laptop, we were able to bridge the gaps for that piece of hardware. So, anyway, sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
That's okay. I get a comment question regularly, and pertaining to Linux use in education.
Okay.
There's an awful lot of systems out there that are very underpowered.
Yes.
That are crying out for an OS other than Windows 3.11, Windows for Workgroups.
Mm-hmm.
But the machines just don't have the muscle.
Yes.
To, you can't load Red Hat 7.2 or newer
mm-hmm.
on the box because the OS is too fat.
Right.
What is the slimmest, poorest resource machine that you can actually get to use your current version of LX?
Sure.
Forget the productivity pack for now.
Desktop LX is less resource hungry than XP, but that's not saying much. So you can run it in 1,000 gigabyte worth of disk space. Or a little bit, a little less than that. We ask people to put a gig's worth of space because they're going to want to save some files. So we let them know that up front to have some spare space for that. And then we recommend 64 megs of RAM, which is pretty resource hungry in general compared to those older computers.
Yeah.
But nothing by today's standards. So
that's small by today's standards.
A 333 megahertz processor, and we've seen it run on as slow as 233 and below. People have really taken it down, but we don't put that on the box. We don't put that on the box.
The problem I'm dealing with right now,
and I suggest for you,
is ten
terminal server project. Honestly, that you turn them into terminals. That's what I totally suggest. Use LTSB.
Yeah,
that's really what I suggest. And we're going to have a terminal solution for desktop LX. It will be there. It's just a little ways out.
Okay.
And so you will have a solution from our company to do that. But right now you don't, so I tell you to use the open source alternative.
Yeah, there are warehouses stuffed full of Sims-based PCs that are they're reasonably powered, either 486 DXs or first gen Pentiums that are in the 66 to 90 range, and they all have 4, 8, 16 meg worth of Sims RAM.
Yeah.
And the Chicago Public School System has a warehouse
mm-hmm.
that it's incredible. It's like 40,000 square feet full of mm-hmm. computers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why I say the drop-in solution that, K-12, LTSB, and LTSB have done that. That is what I suggest people do, is that those machines are very ripe for using in that environment. It's very difficult, especially with the state of any Linux distribution now, to trim it down to the point where the major, distributions out there, where it's going to be useful on that hardware.
Yep.
And we're aware of those warehouses, man. Let me tell you, we know, and it's just as far as our focus goes, we have to pick where we're going to go.
See, my problem right now is I know school districts here in the States that would be willing to donate those systems to me and ship them to places like Peru. I've even got companies that are willing to pick up at least half of the shipping bill, but
yeah.
I don't have a Linux distro that will fit on these machines anymore.
Right. Yeah.
I have a question here. Okay. Xandros offers a superb file manager. Lindos has click and run. What does your distribution have? What does Lycoris have? What's your killer app?
Okay. I would say our killer app is the OS. I would say that our killer app is the entire package. That we don't think that you can just point to one app and say, hey, this is it. Use our entire system because of this one app. Forget about the rest of it. Forget about the fact that Zendros doesn't, you know, quite look as nice, or forget the fact that Windows has some issues with the OS overall, some stability problems. Use the click and run. It's more, to us, it's more about the entire package. So honestly, our killer app is no one single app.
Maybe the integration.
I mean, I think it's the entire operating system. In
the integration.
Yeah, it's the integration of the parts to make the whole. That's more important to us than making a killer app in the OS. And I mean, we have the network browser, which, you know, is sort of like, basically we have the My Linux system, which nobody else has. I think that's pretty killer, in my opinion. You know, you open up My Linux system, and it looks a lot like my computer. You plug in a USB mass storage device, and it pops up right in there. And you just click on it and use it just like you would, you know, if you were a Windows user, or it's pretty intuitive. You open the thing up, and there's your disk. So that's pretty killer, in my opinion. The network browser is pretty killer. Functions a lot like Network Neighborhood. In order to mimic that, so that people have a, you know, an easy transition from the Windows environment. I like that. So, I mean, there are personal things, depending on what it is you need to use the computer for, that would be your own killer app, honestly. I like Iris, too. One-click download of software. I mean, that's pretty... I like it. I think we have a good range of what's good for people. We don't just have to hold up one thing.
Russ, you had another question?
From IRC again, one very persistent question is, how are the Walmart sales doing with the Lycoris loaded PCs?
Okay. They're doing very well. They're doing well. I got in trouble for mentioning numbers before, and I'm not allowed to mention numbers of sales lest bad things happen to me and people come to my house with, you know, suits on and sunglasses.
Oh, I know that one.
So,
the Matrix is looking for you.
What I have to say is we've outsold Lindo's box copy. We just recently put our box copy on the web. You know, you can now buy Desktop LX, Productivity Pack, and Game Pack separate, the software, on the site. 2-1. We outsell them 2-1. And that's kind of a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling for me. Because we don't have nearly the resources that company does. We're very small company. And we're really about product quality, and we've gotten everywhere we've gone by forging our own path and trying to make the product good and making innovations when it comes to ease of use that hadn't hit the Linux world yet. We try to make them, and then people say, yeah, that looks like a good idea. So you see a lot of people coming our way. You see Red Hat making Blue Curve. You see people coming this way, and we were kind of forging that way first, and it's great because I think the more people who can do that, the better. So back to the question, our sales are doing well. Obviously, I would love them to be billions of dollars worth, you know, I could, you know, retire. I'm kidding. But they're doing well. It's not like we're in danger of being, you know, pulled off the site or anything. It's not like, you know, it's the next OS revolution and millions of people are buying it. I would say that it's appropriate for the product level and things are going well.
Another question from IRC is what's the basis of the of your business model? You know, Red Hat for a long time has been trying to sell the services. You know, Mandrake has been trying to do various things around their desktop and so forth. What's the key to the Lycoris business model? How are you going to survive?
All right. I think there's a couple keys. One would be partnership. We're really big on you know, allowing our business model to include other companies that do things really well. For example, if you take a look at our new help center in our new Update 3, it's amazing. Nobody in the Linux community, not even XP, has a help center that has the type of interactivity that we have, because we have a product called Vuelet. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of Vuelet, but it's from a company called Carbon, and these are basically little flash files that walk you through visually and audially how to do a certain thing. It's like a little visual how-to. This is the kind of ease of use and simplicity that if we were to, you know, program the tool to build these Vuelets by ourselves, it would take a tremendous amount of resources. But instead, we partnered with Carbon. They have a tool to build them. What you do is you kind of go through the process yourself, and it takes snapshots of what you're doing, and you add audio to it. It's very simple. It allows us to do them very quickly and make these little Vuelets so that people can use it. to me, that's one of the strengths, is we've just come up with another innovation. Nobody in the entire Linux community has that in their distribution, in their operating system. And we're able to do it because of partnerships. That's the first part. Also, I think that Red Hat has a great example of how you can make services work for you with open source. Is that open source is great, but you have people who, maybe don't quite trust it. They want someone to go to if there's a problem. They want a brand to point at. They want someone to help them. And we definitely want to do that. That's part of our model, is services to companies, whether it's helping them deploy desktops or just being there, maybe not reaping a ton of money from implementing it, across the desktop, but just enough of a contract fee to help them if there's trouble. Be there to support it. That's why we have the Lycoris support program. If you go to our store, you can buy the Lycoris personal advantage plan. It's just a security blanket for you to have support issues taken care of, even if it's via remote assistance, which is something in our OS that you email us and we start a remote assistance session over SSH, and we can control your desktop and show you how to do something or fix a problem for you over the phone, instead of over the phone. So services is definitely another component. Also, the Iris software gallery is something that we're not going to charge for access to it, but we can allow other vendors to have their software in Iris and take a little bit of a royalty from people having their software in Iris, allow people to put their software there, and we take a little bit of a royalty so they sell their software through there, through Iris, which is great. We have a few vendors lined up, and I can't wait to make those announcements when they have their software up there and they're selling it through Iris, because it's a really easy place for consumers to access it. So basically, if you get the picture by now, it's not just selling shrink wrap software, although that's a large part of what it is. I mean, that's our main thrust. You can just look at Lycoris right now and say, wow, look, they shall sell shrink wrap software. Say that 6 times. So that's one component. But you can't, with open source software and a marketplace the way it is now, you can't just do one thing. You have to be able to be multifaceted. You have to be able to say, well, if there's something a customer needs, it's likely that we can provide it for them. So here's services, here's support.
You have to be ready. Ready to tap dance as the market changes.
Yes, and that's one of the other good things about being a smaller company, is the adaptability level. It's a lot easier for us to make those changes and implement those changes.
Well, Jason, I hate to do this, but we're already at 9:40, so we're 40 minutes over.
Oh my goodness gracious! I didn't even notice.
But that's what happens when you have a good guest.
Well, thank you.
We enjoyed having you here.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't want you to hang up. I'd sort of like to talk to you for a few minutes after the show, if you've got a couple minutes to spare.
Yeah.
But again, to all the people in the IRC and all the people who are listeners, I'd like to thank you once again for coming by each week. We really appreciate the fact that every week you seem to come out. You seem to enjoy what we're doing here. Again, we need your help. Tell 10 friends about the show. Continue helping us grow the community, and go to our website, www.thelinuxshow.com, and there's a couple of links there and other things that you can do to help support us, not only financially by becoming a sponsor, but you can become a mirror site as well. I would love to have a couple of mirror sites in Europe and Asia. If there's anybody out there listening, just email to staff@thelinuxshow.com. Or just go to the how-to that's on the website on how to set up a mirror site. It's really pretty easy. It takes maybe about 20 minutes, and we'll add you to our list of LiveLink servers. On behalf of the whole crew here, this has been the February the 25th edition, 2003, of The Linux Show. We'll be back hopefully next week. Kevin is going to be going through a move this weekend, so a significant portion of the studio is moving with him, and so it is possible that we may have to do a canned show next week. We don't know if we're going to be live, but we'll let you know that Tuesday. Just go to the usual places, our site, Linux Today, NewsForge. You can find out plenty of information about the schedule for the show next Tuesday night. So until then, Thanks, everybody, for coming by. This has been The Linux Show. We're out of here.
So you need an email server, huh? Well, check out one of our sponsors. What? The Linux Show has sponsors? Yeah, well, how the hell do you think we pay the bandwidth bill around here? No, it's really more the phone bill, not the bandwidth bill. Phone bill is killing us. But anyways, back to our sponsor. Check out the folks at www.littlebluebox.com and buy their stuff and sponsor.
I'm a glum one. It's explainable. I met someone. Unattainable. Life's a bore. The world is my oyster no more. All the papers where I led the news with my capers now will spread the news. Superman turned out to be Flash in the pan. I've flown around the world in a plane. I settled revolutions in Spain. The North Pole I have charted. Still I can't get started with you. On the golf course, I'm under par. And all the movies ask me to star. Got a house that's a show place. Still I get no place with you. You're so supreme. Lyrics I write of you scheme. Just for the sight of you dream. Both day and night of you. But what good does it do? I've been consulted by Franklin D. And Greta Garbo had me to tea. Still I'm broken hearted, 'cause I can't get started with you.
When I sell kisses at a bazaar, the wolves line up from nearby and far. With kings I've a la carte, but still I can't get started with you. The millionaires I've had to turn down would stretch from London to New York town. The upper crust I visit, but say, what is it with you? Oh, tell me why am I no kick to you? Always stick to you. Fly, Ruthen, and stick to you. Tell me why I'm taboo. Those beauty columns ask my advice. Though I was Miss America twice, still you got me outsmarted, 'cause I can't get started.
Jazz clubs, I've been a star. Even put new strings on my guitar. So many tunes I've charted. Still I can't get started with you. Across the ping pong table, I'm feared. I even grew wonderful beard. I come on like a swinger, but you don't let me linger with
play in tune. My beat is reliable when I croon. The ladies get sizable, but when it's June, it's undeniable. I get winter from you. I've been consulted by Richie C. On every tune.